What is up, freaks? Welcome back to Tales from the Crypt. It's your boy Marty Bent here on an overcast Friday afternoon. Got the Masters on silent in the background. Here with our boy Matt Odell.
How's it going, guys?
For another edition of Rabbit Hole Recap. I do not have the price chart up. Let me pull it up real quick.
That's what I was just trying to do.
You find the block, I'll find the price. The Bitcoin price right now on Friday, April 12th at 12:31 p.m. in New York City, according to the trade block XBX index, is $5,080.07.
And the block height is 571,363.
571,363, nice. Where were we last week at this point? Are we higher or lower price-wise? Obviously, we're higher block-wise.
Yeah, we're at a lower block count. What's the price now?
I think we're hovering around 5,000.
We were like right here. Maybe a little bit higher. Yeah. Maybe like 5,100 or yeah, something. Maybe.
A lot to talk about this week. Big week. Big day on the internet yesterday. But before we get into that, got to give a shout out to this week's sponsor, Unchained Capital. You freaks know all about them. Just had an incredible episode with Parker Lewis that I posted on Tuesday. If you freaks haven't checked that out, go check it out. The first 15 minutes, we go over what Unchained is doing, their ethos, their security-first mindset, and their 2 or 3 multi-sig vaults. That's what we're advertising here in this ad, is the 2 or 3 multi-sig vaults. So if you guys are Bitcoin holders and you're looking for a multi-sig solution, Unchained has done a great job of creating an easy onboarding process with their vault product. Most importantly, they're opening sourcing this product as well. So if you want to benefit from their multi-sig scheme, you'll be able to do so in an open source way too. So Unchained Capital, or security first company in the Bitcoin space, you can set up a vault with their 2 or 3 multi-sig. And then if you guys have some Bitcoin in the vault, you want to get a little cash, you can also get a loan very easily. So go check out Unchained Capital today at www.unchained-capital.com. We'll put a link in the show notes. Matt.
Bang, bang.
Bang, bang. I was pretty pissed off yesterday.
Clearly.
Yeah.
I think we all were.
Yeah. So, as you freaks may know by now, Julian Assange was ripped from the Ecuadorian embassy in London yesterday and is being extradited back to the land of the free. The charges specifically are for helping Chelsea Manning break a password code or attempt to break a password code?
I think it was
code?
A password, yeah.
Wasn't she acquitted for that? Or?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah.
But now she's in prison again because she refused to testify in a grand jury case.
Yeah.
Against Assange and WikiLeaks.
Yeah, so Assange is on his way to the U.S. Ecuador just got a $40 billion loan from the IMF. And
no, it was $4.2 billion.
$4.2 billion, excuse me.
And that was a month ago.
Was it a month ago?
But they were like definitely greasing the wheels, right? Yeah. It was definitely prep.
Yeah. It was weird, like the ex-Ecuador president Correa came out condemning the present president. It was a weird like geopolitical game being played.
I saw on Twitter.
Yeah.
It's a crazy world we live in.
Just, very crazy world.
He just tweets out a dig at Moreno.
Yeah, Correa is not the best leader ever, though. I actually worked for a company based out of Ecuador, so had a bit of insight into the inner workings of the Ecuadorian government and stuff like that. Correa was not a very good leader either. But back to Julian Assange. It's brought back a lot of, we were talking about this before we started recording, brought back a lot of memories of the Snowden leaks. Not that WikiLeaks helped Snowden, but they did help him escape Hong Kong.
Right, they didn't. I don't think they posted the documents, but
I think they're up there now. But
they gave him lawyers and helped him.
Yeah, but they did do the Manning leaks and other leaks as well, proving that Russia is spying on their citizens and other stuff as well.
They did all those diplomatic cables. You remember when the diplomatic cables came out?
Yeah, diplomatic cables. They did the DNC in 2016 as well. But it seems that this man is being persecuted for journalism, for exposing the truth, which is sad to see, right? Because this is something we talk about a lot. It's why we're in Bitcoin, and that's what I wrote in the Bent yesterday, is like we're in this to preserve individual liberty and sovereignty and freedom of speech. At the end of the day, freedom of commerce is freedom of speech. And it seems that
this is a clear-cut case of freedom of speech.
Right. Yeah, and it seems that the U.S. is trying to curb that speech because they don't like people finding out what they're doing behind the scenes. I'm going to let you talk now.
Yeah, I mean, I thought you'd very passionate bent yesterday, and but you just, you really distilled it to what a lot of us feel. You know, this has been a long time coming. He's been in that embassy for 7 years.
In a fucking bedroom.
With just, like, police surrounding them. You know, wasn't even like, a real embassy. It's, like, a half embassy. It's, like, an office complex or something. So, a very small area. It's coming out now that Ecuador was spying on him towards the end. They cut off his communication, like, a year ago. You know. Yeah, it's just, it's a continuation of this saga. I think it's kind of interesting. You know, WikiLeaks is entwined with Bitcoin since the beginning. When
don't kick the hornet's nest, bro.
The first thing they did to go after WikiLeaks was cut off all their donation ability, and Bitcoin would enable them to accept donations when they couldn't accept it any other way.
Yeah. Yeah, and then WikiLeaks has a very storied history with Bitcoin. That was, like, Satoshi came out and said, like, that quote I just said earlier, like, don't kick the hornet's nest, Bitcoin. At that point, I believe it was 2011, probably wasn't robust enough to get that much attention. So I believe they also, WikiLeaks agreed and held off from announcing that they were accepting Bitcoin.
I'm not sure about that.
You're not?
Yeah, I'm not going to. I don't know how that exactly went down.
I'm pretty sure that's how. I think they held
off. I thought they just started accepting donations.
I thought it was in like 2013.
Either way.
Yeah, either way.
Like Assange right now could just have millions of dollars worth of Bitcoin, and no one will know unless he admits it. They could take his freedom, they could take his speech, they could take his life, but they like can't get that money unless
he gives it to them.
That's pretty crazy,
right? No, it's like, let's stay on this theme of like it's like basically oppression, like trying to oppress ideas and oppress thought and information, more importantly, like true information. That's at the end of the day, that's what WikiLeaks has shared with the world. And this instance in particular proves that our efforts against the state in trying to preserve these rights are pretty ephemeral and pretty weak at this moment. And Bitcoin sort of presents this leverage that hasn't previously existed. And that's what I wanted to get at in the bent yesterday, was this is why we Bitcoin. Like,
yeah, I don't know. Like, clearly, you know, freedom of speech is protected in the Constitution, in our country at least. And this seems unconstitutional to me. But at the end of the day, that is all, it's enforced by men. You have to rely on men to carry it out, not abuse it, not do all this stuff. The beauty of Bitcoin is that it relies on this code and this game theory. So you don't have to rely on individuals or groups to act accordingly, right? Act in good faith.
Right. Yeah. So just touching on that. And today's been actually, it was a good topic to sort of riff off of this Julian Assange story. Was a very illuminating post, not even illuminating, just very good post by Hector Rosecrans, Bitcoin is a Weapon. And Hector was in the Navy and sort of explain the power dynamics that work on the battle of warfare, and sort of tied in how Bitcoin, the modern day warfare is all about controlling the commons, because then you can control commerce, and then Bitcoin is a way for individuals to sort of take the control of commerce out of the hands of this sort of state apparatus, military industrial apparatus, if you will.
He touched on the metaphor of Bitcoin as AK-47, right?
Yeah, AK-47 is one of those.
We've heard Nick Carter say that a lot.
Yeah, before. So AK-47s are a prime example of a tool that gave individuals asymmetric leverage over bigger foes. So the example he used in his article was the rice paddy farmers in Vietnam were able to stave off the U.S. military during the Vietnam War. And then Bitcoin, yeah, it is a weapon, not a physical weapon, but a cryptographic weapon, if you will.
It's the most nonviolent weapon, most powerful nonviolent weapon we've ever had.
Right? And that's beautiful, too. Like, a lot of people are pessimistic about the world and get crazy thinking about like hyper-Bitcoinization and what kind of world that will bring in. But it's like a peaceful revolution, I believe. And that's, again, I say peace and love at the end of every podcast. And I do believe that Bitcoin provides an opportunity for a peaceful revolution.
Well, I mean, I think there's scenarios at play here that could be really messy, but that's not Bitcoin's fault. Those scenarios are going to be messy anyway. Bitcoin will make them as less messy as possible, the least messiness.
Yes.
More orderly.
Hopefully.
Orderly reset is kind of.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, a weird day on the internet yesterday. It was, I feel like there was like negative vibes. I checked to see if Mercury was in retrograde. It's not.
There you go. Science.
Yeah. But staying on the topic of free speech, another thing that was going on Bitcoin Twitter yesterday was HODL not. Did he get suspended?
No, he didn't get suspended. He was getting doxxed by fucking Calvin Ayer.
Yeah. So some of you freaks.
Oh, wait. Craig Wright is a fraud.
Craig Wright is a fraud. As some of you freaks are aware, there's been that a Twitter campaign to basically out Craig Wright as a fraud.
It's like hashtag Craig Wright is a fraud.
Hashtag Craig Wright is a fraud. And HODL not, again, Calvin Ayer and
a pseudonymous Bitcoiner named HODL not on Twitter
started the Lightning Network torch. And he took a picture with the shirt that Bitrefill made of the Lightning Network torch bearers up to a certain point. And in the picture, you could see his tattoos, which are very unique identifying things for humans if you have tattoos. And they were able to dox him based off that, which is pretty crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I think they were doing other things, too. It was really fucked up. You put, like, a reward on information in, like, shitty Bitcoin SV tokens. So, like, worthless reward. But he still put a reward up. I mean, I assume most of our listeners know, but Craig Wright is the guy who pretended he was Satoshi like 3 years ago and then helped push forward the Bitcoin Cash fork, and all the Bitcoin Cash people all endorsed him and gave him credibility and bullshit like that and didn't call him out at the time when it really mattered. And then he, like a proper psychopath, forked that chain too, and now he has Bitcoin Cash SV. And he still has yet to prove. He did this whole thing where he was supposed to prove he was Satoshi, got cameras, got like Fortune or Forbes or whatever, some big newspapers all in a room together to prove it, and did
Gavin
a fake
Anderson.
Proof. Yeah, he tricked Gavin. Gavin's never pulled that back. And he like did like a wishy-washy kind of like, I shouldn't have been giving any credence to anything. But he never actually said that Craig Wright isn't Satoshi. And here we are today. Now this is a desperate man, and he's suing all the people to try and get some attention.
Yeah, and it's totally plausible, and I think I do believe that he was probably around in the early days, but I think he's trying to manipulate certain avenues to make it look like he was more important or more involved than he actually was.
But the thing is, like, if he had coins from, like, even, like, block 100 or, like, block 300 or block 2000 that were, like, kind of early-ish, like, I feel like he would have flexed those as well. You know, like, because there's no way anyone can concretely 100% prove they're Satoshi. But you can prove that you were very early and might very well be Satoshi if you either move coins from an early address, or if you use that address to sign a transaction, so you can cryptographically prove it. That's one of the beauties of Bitcoin. One of the beauties of Satoshi's creation is that you can verifiably prove ownership of funds at a certain given time.
With math.
So I feel like if he had any kind of reasonably early stashes, he would have already flexed that as like his, you know, oh, here's like a little half proof or whatever. This is proof I'm Satoshi. And he hasn't even done that. So who the fuck knows?
The tulip trust, bro. You got to wait till 2020.
Because that's totally a move Satoshi would make. Create like a global trust minimized ledger and then hide the keys in a traditional trust. You know, that's a total Satoshi move. Fucking bullshit, man. And a lot of really prominent Bitcoiners and shitcoiners got fooled by this guy. Either they got fooled or they just went along with it because it was convenient for them. But they gave him tons of credibility, and most of them haven't walked it back still to this day. Some of them have even doubled down on it in like the last couple of months, and it's just absolutely irresponsible, I would say.
Yeah. It is, people like to cling to that idea. They think, and I think it's the quest for the better Bitcoin, the quest to get in Bitcoin when it's like $200, $300 that still exist, and clinging to the very minuscule possibility that Craig Wright is Satoshi is sort of leaving that quote unquote opportunity open for the believers.
Yeah, they like choose to be ignorant about it, right? Because it's they're hoping their bags will pump.
Exactly.
And just to go back, like, so a lot of people use NIMS on Twitter, on Bitcoin Talk, on IRC, all these different places where Bitcoiners communicate. We have a lot of developers that operate under NIMS. NIMS are super important. It's a privacy thing. You don't want to be connected to Bitcoin. That's the ultimate thing you can do for your Bitcoin security is to never tie your real name to Bitcoin. So like we need to protect the use of NIMS. People should be welcome. NIMS should be encouraged. More people should be using NIMS than not. That should be the default, if anything.
Yeah, we're talking about, I mean, yesterday in reaction to the doxing of HODLNOT, everybody changed their avatars and names to HODLNOT.
It was so confusing, I'm
right?
Sure.
But it did. It was like a glimpse of if everybody who had changed their avi wasn't specifically talking about this, or was just like putting ideas out there, and you couldn't tell who was who. A meritocracy of ideas could arise from that, right?
Someone was like, "It's like they ran Wasabi on my Twitter feed, and now all of the outputs look the same." Anyone who attempts to dox someone who chooses to use a NIM online should be absolutely
tarred and feathered in the digital world.
Yeah, ridiculed. Like, yeah. That should not fly in this community. So it's really great to see the outpouring support for HODLNOT.
Yeah. And again, obviously Satoshi was a NIM. Probably wouldn't have SegWit without Schadenfreude, who was a NIM. Is Jinpo a NIM? You don't know. I don't know either. But yeah, there's a lot of NIMS involved. Like, some of the best ideas on Bitcoin Twitter that I've learned from throughout the years have come from anonymous people that I have no idea who they are or where they are. And
that's the coolest part. People think one of the biggest complaints is like, oh, you don't have skin in the game, you know, because your public identity isn't linked to it. Like, NIMS have to work extra hard to get any kind of credibility because they don't have that real life identity to latch onto in the beginning. They can't say, "Oh, I'm a fund manager," and listen to me because I manage all this money. Instead, they're completely judged by their ideas and their contributions and how they contribute to the community. And so, if anything, that's like the most
meritocratic.
There you go. Way to do things, and that's. I think that's really fucking cool.
No, I do too, and it's. Yeah, we've.
And it doesn't know sex. You don't know the gender.
Yeah,
you know, that's a big one.
I found out somebody who I thought was like a middle-aged man was a woman in her 20s a couple of weeks ago. I was blown away. I was like, "What the hell?" Not what the hell, like, but it was just like crazy. You never know. It's awesome. Yeah, so again, NIMS are important. Doxing's not cool.
Not cool at all.
Craig Wright's a fraud.
You can put people's lives at risk by doxing them. It's fucked up. I mean, and it's against Twitter's terms of service, for whatever that's worth.
Yeah, I mean, and it puts people's families in. Like, Jameson got doxed and had a SWAT team come
to
his house.
He got swatted. Yeah, yeah, they sent the SWAT team to his house.
Yeah, not cool. Be aware, freaks. The HODL guide. We meant to talk about this last week. But it slipped from the subject line, and we did not talk about it. The HODL guide, who put it together? Justin Moon and
it's a NIM put it together. With he took feedback from a bunch of people.
Yeah, I think Justin Moon provided feedback.
Among others, and It's all on GitHub, so you can submit pull requests if you want. But basically, it goes through the basics of using Wasabi, doing your own multi-sig cold storage. So if you want to do like a multi-sig setup similar to Unchained setup, but without having Unchained as the third party, like the guide walks you through how to do that, how to safely use a hardware wallet. So it has different levels, basically.
Exactly.
He has like a full multi-sig cold storage setup, which is basically multi-sig with Ledgers and Trezors and Electrum, using as the client to put that all together. And he shows you how to use Electrum personal server and stuff like that. It's really good. I looked it over. I highly recommend it.
Yeah, no, I think what you just said is the best part about this guide. It has like different levels of competency and comfort. So if you're looking for sort of a comprehensive guide on storage, this is the one that we like this week, and we'll read it among others.
Yeah,
as many others. One of my favorites of all time is Rusty Russell's Unremarkable Guide to Cold Storage. Is that Unremarkable? Yeah, I think it's Unremarkable. But
I really like how this one used. Yeah, that was a great guide. I really like how this one. The cold storage setup they say is that he walks you through, or she, I guess, is a multi-sig hardware wallets, which I think is like the best balance of for pretty much most threat models. It's the best balance of convenience and security, and you could do a lot with it. You can get like really creative with multi-sig, how you where you store the keys, you know, how you split them up.
Well, this segues perfectly to the next topic, which we meant to riff on last week, but again, slipped our mind, was different multi-sig scenarios that you can join in. So you can get really unique with these setups. And obviously, we've been talking a lot about 2 of 3, but there's many ways through which you can engage a multi-sig.
3 of 5, 3 of 5 of 7.
Yeah.
Don't go crazy at the keys. You don't. 2 of 3 is probably good for most people. 3 of 5 or 3 of 5. But yeah, you can have like one with a relative. The thing about Unchained Cap, which is interesting, which we forgot to talk about last week, which is I wanted to bring up, is there's only one key in that 2 of 3 that Unchained considers the parent key. So if you give, for instance, like you give your brother one key and he lives on the other side of the country, and then you hold one key, and Unchained holds one key. Unchained will never sign with your brother's key. Mm-hmm. He'll only sign with your key. So you know your brother can't steal your money, but you need your brother to give you the key to move your money, and Unchained can't take your money. So you have this nice little setup here where that's relatively simple to do without needing to necessarily trust your relative or whoever is holding that third key.
Yeah, and if your brother decides to be an asshole and just leave the country and not tell you and fall off the face of the earth, Unchained's there to sign for you.
Yeah, exactly. And then you pay, that's when you pay their fee. It's
10
like,
bips.
Yeah, 10 bips on the transaction.
Yeah. Yeah, and then think of other ways, like if you're a business partner and you guys are controlling a multi-sig wallet for business funds, you can set up a certain scheme with that and have certain conditions for that. It's very conditional. You can make it like an if and function for these setups in a lot of ways.
Yeah, you can just get really creative with it, and I think for most people, multi-sig is probably the way forward. And then also, just on top of all that, with all these scenarios, like use multiple methods, you know, like certain like key generation schemes like could be broken or done improperly. So you want to just always have, you know, like the Titanic, you want it all to be compartmentalized so you can.
Like the Titanic, or do you want
to? Well, like the Titanic theoretically was supposed to work. You know, like if a portion of the boat got hit, it wasn't supposed to sink, right? It was supposed to.
Yeah, well, obviously that didn't work out.
Yeah, not how the Titanic came out, but how it was supposed to work in theory is a good way of setting it up.
Yeah, the specs had it perfectly. The implementation did not.
No, I think both was fucked, right? But anyway, you understand the point.
Yes,
just use multiple methods and don't put all your eggs in one basket. That's just a recipe for failure.
Yeah. Speaking of putting a lot of eggs in one basket, Coinbase has added EOS to their platform. You put this on the list. I'm not particularly.
I put this on the list because I think it's finally the end of me ever having an opinion on what they add, because they've added Ripple and EOS back to back. So like really, there's no much lower you can go in terms of complete centralized shitcoins. So they've set the bar so low at this point, and it never needs to be brought up again.
Yeah, and this wasn't on the list, but something we should probably mention was somebody, I believe, sold 3,000 Bitcoin in the span of a couple minutes on Coinbase Pro earlier this week, and they had to shut down the exchange.
For 2 hours. They're too busy adding shitcoins, and they're not focused on their core product. It's, like, fucking ridiculous.
Well, it's ridiculous, especially after December 2017, when the app was practically unusable, and to think that we're almost 2 years or a year and a half away from that, and they can't scale in a bear market. It's like, what the fuck? Like, what are you doing?
It was
a sell order. It's not like it was a buy order either.
I don't know what their target market is anymore. They have no, like, what the real traders aren't trading on Coinbase Pro as completely evidenced by the lack of liquidity when there's a $3,000 Bitcoin sell order. And I think the consumer retail traders that want like a bunch of shit coins are probably on Binance. And then you have the people that are just stacking sats, and they're mostly on Cash App or other, the American ones are on Cash App, and the other ones are on other services that isn't Coinbase. So like what is their target demo, and how
confused
is adding EOS fucking doing anything to further that?
I don't know. They seem very confused in their product roadmap, and they lost a good member of their team, Dan Romero.
He's been there forever. He's been there since like 2014.
Yeah.
He was like employee number 20 or employee number 15 or something like that.
Yeah. And now they have a new debit card in the UK, too, if you want.
Wait, let's just get back on Romero. Like, I think that, you know, this is probably proof that he also agrees with me that they have zero fucking focus.
I've never met Dan or talked to Dan, so I can't speak.
Yeah, neither have I. But yeah. In his blog post, the blog post was, like, super nice, whatever. Didn't say where he's going next or anything like that. But, you know, I can't imagine being – I can't imagine how infuriating it would be being in that kind of position and watching all this go down.
Yeah.
Because, like, who the fuck want EOS, really? XRP? Like, that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous to me.
Yeah, again, they seem confused.
And this crypto card, the debit card, what do you think about that?
They already had it.
I don't... Did they?
They had it here in the U.S. I used it. Remember the Shift card?
Did they get rid of it?
Yeah, it got discontinued at some point. I don't know why, but...
One's UK only.
Yeah.
You can now spend Ripple everywhere Visa's accepted.
That was like, and I only used my Shift card like once or twice, and it was back when people were preaching that you should use Bitcoin, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna prove that I can buy shoes with Bitcoin. I think I bought a pair of shoes using the Shift card or something like that.
But you're really just instantly selling it and then paying the person in USD.
Yeah, it's essentially.
I want to see a movement where people spend Bitcoin at places that pledge to not convert it to USD. Like, I feel like that could actually, like, because then it's more closed loop.
Close the loop.
Yeah.
We'll be doing that here at TSTC at some point.
But anyway, this card isn't a bad idea. It's, you know, it's like a centralized layer 2. And, yeah, it's nothing extraordinary, but it does kind of obviate the need. It completely obviates the purpose of these more centralized shitcoins. Like, to spend Ripple or to spend Bitcoin with that card costs the same amount in fees because Coinbase is holding it for you the whole fucking time, right? So it's not like, oh, XRP, super low fees. That doesn't save you anything there.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. But it's available. If you're in the UK, you're a Coinbase user, and you want to use their debit card.
Just don't.
On to more technical discussion, which we're not very technical, but we like to talk about. LND 0.60 was recently released. I haven't been up to date with Lightning development, LND specifically. Is this the one with backups, or are we getting backups?
I don't think so. I'm like trying to ninja search right now. There's something in there. I'm not going to speak on this, but it's good that we have an update. I haven't really looked into it yet.
Yeah.
And Zap updated accordingly as well.
Yeah, Zap updated 0.4.1, which has BEC 32 address support. So if you're running Zap, definitely upgrade that.
I'm still trying to like catch up to the feature set of the previous LND version.
Right.
I have to say, like, the only way I can learn is just to jump in.
And you jumped in pretty pretty head first. We our Noddle Lightning node is hitting the leaderboards on 1ml.com.
It's all the freaks. Freaks are doing great things.
The freaks and you being reckless. How
it's getting a little bit reckless.
How's the experience of managing the node?
It's less reckless than Max, you know.
That's true.
So it's just all a matter of perspective.
Yeah, but what's the node management been like? What's your process been like?
You want to look up our node? How many channels are we at? If you just go to a 1ml and then type in stack and sats, it comes up. The Noddle has been great. It's been performing like a champ. I think we're like top 60 by capacity and maybe top 70 by number of channels. Does it say there?
Channel count 174. We have 174 channels open. Capacity, we're ranked 59th. Channel, 65.
That's crazy. And it's running off this little $400 box. You know, it's been handling it like a champ. It doesn't lag or anything like that. Management is, I'm getting more used to the Ride the Lightning app, which is really, really useful.
So let's...
And Zap. It's basically, I use Ride the Lightning, Zap, and Jewel.
So let's dive into the specifics of management. Is it like riding a bike hard at first, but as you sort of get used to opening channels and rebalancing, it becomes more of a process, an easy process?
Well, Zap has come a long way. It's way more intuitive now. I think it's definitely, there's definitely a learning curve, and I learn like new things about it every day. But it's way more intuitive than, for instance, when I had my first node set up for when I sent the Jack Torch. That was way more
clunky.
Yeah, I would say it's way more like, you open Zap, it shows you all your channels. It shows you basically a bar that shows on which side your liquidity is on per channel. So I go in there, like I make sure that the big channels we have open with like Bit Refill and Koala Stud and stuff like that are, that they still have capacity for the outbound, because really that's all I can control right now. They don't let you, there's no easy way to balance those channels. It's going to get easier. But so like I have to always make sure that we have outbound capacity to them. Otherwise, the freaks that are connected to us can't get to those services. Mm-hmm. The Bitcoin Rabbi on Twitter, he just released a children's book.
Yeah, check that out. We'll post the link in the notes.
But we even did one better, because he told me that he was going to launch ahead of time, and he needed inbound liquidity to his BTC Pay server. So I opened up a big channel to him before the book went out, and then I wake up in the morning after he launched the book. And apparently he was doing pretty well, because most of my outbound capacity to him, his inbound was on the opposite side. Like they had been used. So I opened up another channel with him to make sure that the freaks could pay with Lightning if they wanted to.
Freaks, let's take a second to reflect on how crazy that is. Like, you want to talk about DeFi? Like, it's a big meme in the quote unquote crypto Twitter world right now. This is similar to it. Like, you're creating liquidity for an individual that you know via Twitter. I don't think you've ever met the Bitcoin Rabbi in person.
No, I didn't. I actually, not yet.
Nobody's stopping you from doing that. And it's just individuals coordinating, saying, hey, you're launching a book. I want to help provide liquidity for you. Here, let's open a channel. Nobody's stopping us. There's nothing stopping us. It's crazy.
It's pretty fucking cool.
right? It's reflect on that. That's crazy.
Anyway, so you can open a channel with us by going to going to 1ml.com and typing in stacking sats and comes up.
Matt, they're not even going to have to type it in. We're on the leaderboard, so you're just going
to
see it on the front.
We're on the homepage at 1ml.com if you go to it. Or if you just like open Zap or Jewel and you type in stacking sats, it should come up too.
One word, correct.
Yeah, or you could type in TFTC, it comes up, or RHR. Hit all the tags.
Hit all the tags.
And we'll just keep coming back to this. We'll do check-ins. No, hopefully we have backups soon. That would be nice. Once we have backups, then we're golden.
Well, I think that's the next iteration of this, is we're going to set up a powerful node in this studio and maybe set up like backup nodes and stuff like that.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. And
first of many.
Yeah, first of many. But it's been fun watching it unfold.
It's the best way to learn. You just learn. I learned so much more by trial by fire.
Right. It's a proverb, or it's not even a proverb. It's a thought I live my life by too.
All right. And if you were wondering if you can make any money off of being a node, you cannot. At least right now, you can't. You might very well be able to in the future, but right now, You're not going to be making any money doing it
because of the cost to open channels, or
yeah, the fees that are being paid on the network are just minimal.
Okay,
they'll
rise with demand.
Yeah, exactly. And also, I think a lot of people are, you know, the network is more run by ideological insiders.
Altruistic.
Right now, right?
Yeah,
so they keep their fees low. People don't know. They don't know that they can change from the default fee.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's been fun to watch that grow. And sorry if I'm a little sluggish today, Freaks. I had a banger of a dinner last night. I got home late. Had to wake up early to write. Speaking of bangers, Binance partners with CipherTrace. You put this on. I don't know. I don't follow Binance too much. CZ seems to confirm that they are KYC locking accounts too. I saw you tweet about that earlier this week. That's interesting. You heard rumors of people getting locked out of their accounts?
Yeah, I got some DMs from people. I have two reports. Seems pretty credible. They had accounts for a while. Always used a VPN. Never did KYC. It was like the base unverified account. And all of a sudden they just get locked out of their account. And they can't withdraw their funds unless they provide full KYC, like ID, face scan, stuff like that, address. And so I tweeted that out. Both users were using VPNs. And so I tweeted that out, and CZ basically gave me like a PR speak where he admitted that that's exactly what they're doing. They partnered with a service called Identity Mind a month ago. Both these reports happened like within the last week, 2 weeks. And then yesterday they announced they partnered with CipherTrace as well. So who knows when that was. And they're both chain analysis companies. So it seems like Binance is turning up the heat. You should assume that if you're an unverified account on Binance, you can probably get KYC'd at any moment and your funds locked. Not your keys, not your coins. So just take that, you know, just be aware.
Be aware. It's out there now because Binance, since its inception, has been the go-to exchange for people who don't want to KYC.
Yeah, the privacy. But yeah. So now that looks like it's changing. They have a huge target on their back, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Binance. Let's talk about Binance for a little bit. I mean, I'm not too abreast of the granular particulars of their operation, but it seems they're geographically disparately located. Probably have many.
They have like 8 different sub corporations in like all different countries. That's how they're doing their fiat rollout, is all separate companies in every jurisdiction they do fiat.
Okay.
With like Papa Binance out of Malta, which is like no fiat.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have this Dex, not Dex, in the works, which is supposedly, I have not really looked into it all. So it should be interesting to see how KYC plays into that, because most of these, I don't think I've ever seen an actual decentralized DEX. I guess maybe like BISC is kind of close.
Something came out about these DEXs today too, about like miners being able to front run the traders.
Yeah, that's always, I think, always been an issue.
it's like kind of, it's hard to solve.
It might be impossible to solve, right? If you have you.
Well, no, I think insight Bisc, into. I think Bisc.
I don't know about Bisc. I think this was about like another.
See, the difference is those are DEXs, I think, that run on like smart contract platforms, like Ethereum
yes,
or something.
Yes, this is.
So all the code is out there and it has to get confirmed by miners and everything.
Yes.
Like Bisc, you run a separate client on your computer. It's like a full node, a Bisc full node.
Yeah,
you like know, and you're communicating with each other.
Yeah, it's similar to HODL HODL. It's not
right
necessarily on chain.
Right, it isn't.
Yeah.
Except for the multi-sig back and forth.
Yeah, but with these like smart contract DEXs, the miners who are constructing the blocks are obviously able to see what people are attempting to trade.
Right, so they can front run the trades or not confirm a transaction or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting. It's crazy all the.
But with Binance anyway, so like their DEX is probably going to be pretty centralized, but they'll probably use it as like a regulatory arbitrage move where they pretend it's not. And then they don't do KYC. But who knows how long that holds up for. You know, I think I said this about a year ago, and it was like really controversial at the time because everyone was doing their Binance
pump.
Yeah, their Binance love fest on Twitter and in the community. But we've seen this play out plenty of times in the past where you have a new exchange come in this case it was Binance. They have no regulatory overhead. They're not a target at all. They're able to list a lot of shit coins frequently, update it constantly. Just keep, they have nothing holding them back. Just keep adding new users. And then once they get really big, they become a regulatory target and they have to start cutting down on what they have. KYC, no new coins, start delisting stuff. We saw this happen with both Poloniex and Bittrex. Like each of them before Binance was king. Like each of them were king, and now they're like empty. Like no one uses them,
right?
And then that's what's going to happen with Binance. Like at some point, you know, Binance will just get too overwhelmed, and then even though CZ does seem like he's more of a
cypherpunk type,
nah, I don't know, but
he tries to portray that in the media.
He's gonna go for it. He's going for it. You know, he's not. Yeah. He's not. Yeah.
While I have it on the top of my mind, another one of my ticks that you need to like snap at me every time I do is right. Like after you say something, I say right. That's another tick.
I don't have any issues with these, but I'll snap at
you. I'm trying to get rid of these ticks. They annoy me when post at it when I'm like listening to these recordings.
Okay, so I'll make sure to tell you that in particular.
Thank you, asshole. China, they're banning Bitcoin again.
The end is near.
The end is nigh. What do we have the China bans Bitcoin scoreboard in hand? What number is this?
We must be over 15, I think.
At least, if you
include last bear market when it got banned all the time last bear market.
2016, and I think China banned Bitcoin like 5 times in a span of 3 weeks.
It was so crazy how many times they banned it. And then it was never actually banned.
Never. This time, this particular banning... it was brought to you by the energy ministry in China, and they want to ban mining, not necessarily Bitcoin.
Yeah, just the Bitcoin mining, which is, there's a lot of Bitcoin mining over there because they have a lot of excess hydro.
Yeah. Now, and this puts a lot of the Bitcoin haters in a weird predicament where they're saying, hey, China's banning Bitcoin. That's bad for Bitcoin. Or is it good for Bitcoin because it helps make it more geographically disperse?
Yeah, I think it's like it'd be bad for China, and they probably will not do it. But Bitcoin, you know, Bitcoin will either be unaffected or it'll be a net benefit because we have a decent amount of miners in China. It has spread out more recently. Especially as like China's becoming more, they want miners to register and do all this stuff. So you at least want to move some of your mines out of there.
I've heard of a lot of Chinese miners moving to the US.
Yeah. Because we have super cheap excess hydro in a politically stable environment. It's a great combination for a miner,
right?
God damn it. So this will just spread out the, you said right. This will spread out. I like when you say right. This will spread out the global distribution of miners. It won't do anything actually because they're not going to ban it. This is the most likely scenario.
And China, like, China ban is the Bitcoin equivalent to the boy who cried wolf. I think that takes the cake for that parable analogy.
I think it's more likely they tax, you know, they were already taxing Bitcoin miners, but they put a bigger tax on them. You might as well make money from it.
Yeah, and this is actually not on the list either, but I saw a friend of the pod, Joe Weisenthal, tweeted out about the Berrien oil fields in Texas were increasing the amount of flared natural gas that they were exposing to the environment. And it presented like, hey, this is why we have Bitcoin and companies like Upstream Data. This is, we can create efficiencies in these places.
No, it was, I think the line was that they flare more natural gas than
they sell.
No, than they would need to power all the homes in Texas, which yes. is crazy.
Yeah, it's,
that's a crazy stat. Insane. Talk about wasting energy, right?
Yeah, but, and this is, and so I quote tweeted, I was like, this is perfect example of an opportunity for Upstream Data to show up on the scene. And Steve Barber hopped in and let us know that he's actually is working with some companies in Texas, not on that field specifically. So it seems that at least some energy producers are starting to wise up and realize that Bitcoin can help. And obviously that's one of my favorite FUD to refute is Bitcoin is an energy waster, when in fact it is an opportunity to become as energy efficient as possible on this planet. And the way that reality comes into, or the way that vision comes into reality, is just by entrepreneurs like Steve Barber making the shit and sending it down there, and you have energy producers using it and noticing the benefits. It's just going to take time. Like all this, it's going to take time and patience.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, it's the easiest sell in the world. Like you'll make more money.
Yeah.
If you run this miner, and then it also benefits the environment, but they don't even have to care about the environment. It just happens to benefit it.
Just a positive externality of the incentive system.
It's the best incentive ever.
Right.
God, I think this environment would be, our environment would be way better if everyone could make money at protecting it.
Yeah. Again, like solve the problem with incentives. And this is something that we've posited on this podcast frequently in the last few weeks. But what if Satoshi marketed Bitcoin as like a synthetic battery instead of like a money system? Would people rally around it harder? We'll never know, but it's an interesting thought experiment.
I mean, it is a synthetic battery, right? You can basically store energy as money instead of as jewels.
Right.
That's pretty cool.
Damn it.
I didn't even realize you say it that much until you brought it up.
It is annoying. I'm sorry, freaks. That was it for the topic list. Do you have anything?
What time are we at?
We got 10 minutes left.
That recent episode you had with Parker was fantastic.
Thank you.
Don't bet more. Don't risk more on USD than you can afford to lose.
Again, I'm very excited that I was able to record that podcast. Parker's somebody I've been talking with about Fed policy for a couple of years now, and anybody who's listened to that podcast can tell how knowledgeable he is on the subject of Fed policy over the last decade. And we were talking about it before we hit record, but for any of you traditional finance types out there, or any of you freaks trying to help traditional finance people in that industry come to understand Bitcoin, this is a great episode for them because it really presents the case for Bitcoin by showing how inefficient our current system is.
Yeah, I mean, I had the other day, I had a 2-hour private podcast with Parker, aka a conversation, and it was he's completely blown away. Like that conversation just got me going.
Well, it's funny, right? Because this information's been out in the wild. It's just out in the wild. Anybody can access these transcripts and go through them. It just took one man to actually read the 300-page transcripts and put it into layman's terms of how inconsistent these central planners are with their policies.
How long is the waiting period again? Like they release it.
They
way
release
late.
Them 4 or 5 years after the meeting.
That's why we finally get to see what like
the talks that were leading up and after the 2008 crisis.
You get the meeting minutes, I believe, the day or the week after they happen, but then the full transcripts of actually what was said verbatim in the meetings comes out 4 to 5 years later. I can't remember. I believe it's four. I think it's like election cycles type stuff. Well, it wouldn't be election cycle type stuff, but point is it comes out later than the meetings, way later after the meetings. I can't even speak, dude. I was up to like 3 a.m. last night. I had to wake up early.
There you go.
Had
got to hustle.
Got to hustle.
What else? I listened to a good podcast this week. What Bitcoin Did's podcast with Nick Carter and Pierre. It's worth a listen. That's a good listen.
Couple freaks that have been on this podcast. They talked about Lightning Network.
Yeah, it's part of his Lightning Network series.
Yeah. And that, yeah, so that's going on this month. We got Shitcoin Week coming up in a few weeks here in New York City. Are you excited?
Yeah, a lot of people come in, you know, excited to meet some faces.
Meet some faces.
I'm both like excited and, yeah, I'm excited.
Yeah, for anybody who's
not going to Consensus. They can go fuck themselves, but...
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to go to any... obviously, I want to record, so I don't think I'm going to go to any of the conferences, but that's the beauty of this week, is you don't have to go to any... Like, if any of you are on the fence out there, like, should I buy a ticket? You could just come to New York, hang out, and find a party or
yeah,
or
like
something.
The side events and stuff for... And just people meeting up is where it's at.
Yeah, conferences are... Just riff on conferences for a second here. It's just like... conferences where you go from like booth to booth.
Well, Consensus is like everything that's wrong with conferences, all packaged into one really expensive event.
Right? God damn it. Just like the whole, just like a very like late capitalist type thing, like just walking booth to booth. Nobody really wants to be there. You're like squished with thousands of people.
But I mean, not all conferences are the same, right? It's just
true.
Consensus is like particularly horrible. There's a lot of good conferences.
That's true. I'm talking about this like booth to booth.
Yeah, and this setup. Week is always bad. They're gonna Ethereum Land is also coming down on us as well, because they have the week before, or like they start off with their conference, and I think in Brooklyn.
Yeah, Consensus is not too far from where we record. I believe they're doing. I think. The ETH conference is like Bushwick or something like that.
Ethereal or Ethereal?
Ethereal. So everybody's going to be in New York in a few weeks. That's where I met Bitcoin Sign Guy last year. Was that Shitcoin Week?
Yeah, I met a lot of people at Shitcoin Week last year. Yeah, including BSG. Yeah, so I'm definitely looking forward to it. It'll be a good time.
Yeah. Any plans this weekend?
Not that I like to share with the freaks. It's gonna be a good weekend though. Everyone should, you know, have a great weekend.
Have a great weekend. If you, as we described earlier, if you're looking to learn more about Lightning Network, set up a node and start experimenting with it.
Yeah, open a channel with us.
Yeah.
If it's we'll presumably open channels back. I've still been opening channels back, but it's getting a little bit reckless. We need to wait till backups to ramp it up more.
Yeah, that'll definitely open up a floodgate of even more recklessness, I would imagine.
But because we have so many channels, it's like really hard for me to like look through them to see who's opened a big channel with us so we can open it back. So if you do, like, either DM me or get me on Telegram or Keybase or Wire. My PGP key is there if you want to use the PGP key to communicate, but we can, you know, we can reciprocate.
Yeah. You know where to find us, freaks. Sorry if this episode was a bit sluggish. That's all we got.
Cheers. Stay humble. Stack sats.
Peace and love.